Welcome to the Hardy White internal debate between the identity and expectations created and sustained by others who perceive the self versus the identity of the solitary self. Public versus private Hardy, with our moderators Butchie Spinoza and Lou Register. Join us now in an anonymous London pub.
Hello there. This is Butchie Spinoza. I'm in an anonymous London pub, and I'm so drunk and slurring my words. I'm kidding. The beer here is embarrassingly weak. It tastes like Werner's. Anyway, this is some sort of debate between the public and private Hardy. And for some reason, we're doing it here, and Lou Register is going to co-moderate with me.
Hello, everybody.
So this is going to be a very serious debate between these two parts of Hardy that we're not interested in, but for some reason, we're going to hear them out. Thanks for that, and hello, everybody. So which one is this? How will we distinguish between the two parts of you? Are you going to do different voices? I wouldn't.
Don't do different voices. It's silly.
All right. Just be yourself. Another thing I'd like to know is, can we get rid of the background noise? I can't hear myself think. There we go. Anyway, all right, should we ask a question?
Oh, yeah, you're supposed to ask me a question about how I see myself. I think this show is going to be on identity, because I believe there's two conflicting sorts of forces between the self that is perceived by, let's say, your Uncle Bumps.
I don't have an Uncle Bumps.
What's that?
I don't have an Uncle Bumps.
All right, well, Uncle Larry.
Uncle Larry? My Uncle Larry?
No, anybody's Uncle Larry. I'm just saying the way that someone sees you versus the way you see yourself and your internal dialogue and everything.
Some people don't have an internal dialogue.
Yeah, some people have an internal monologue or just screaming.
Oh, I understand that. But I thought what I'd do, yeah, I thought it would be real clever.
Oh, I figured
that, what if I had a sort of debate? Because I watched the presidential debate, presidential's in quotes, and there was a debate between the candidates, and it's mentioned, it's foretold in a Paul Simon song where it goes, candidates debate like that. I don't know what song it is, but I'm like, what? He knew about it. Either way you look at it, you lose, or something he said. Hey, choo-coo-coo-coo-choo. And they mentioned Mrs. Robinson. And I don't know how she hasn't figured into it yet. But that's a lot like Nostradamus. You say, whatever happened to Hister? Or whatever you say. And then, because it hasn't played out yet, necessarily. Oh, my goodness. I haven't started the debate. I'm about to start the debate.
Yeah, could you? Can we ask a question?
Yeah. What's your problem? Well, that's kind of vague. Could you get more specific?
So I think that both of the ways that you see yourself is wrong. Is one more wrong than the other?
That's actually not a bad question.
I know. You sound like one of those sycophantic, flattering waiters at a bourgeois restaurant who congratulates you for your wine pick.
Excellent choice.
I think that the way we see ourselves is so complicated. None of it can't be accurate.
None of it can't be accurate? Did you say that double negative on purpose?
No, none of it can be accurate. I don't think.
Some of it can't be.
Exactly. So it's not really the way you see yourself. Oh my goodness, it's so distorted. I was getting back into photography recently and I got a camera. And there are so many ways to see the world inaccurately. And you learn that through the camera. It's a wonderful way to capture memory and light and everything. But you have to do something with the light. You have to focus it. You have to tell it what to do, basically. Boss it around. I do like when the light does whatever it wants and says, I'm just going to be abstract today, not representational. And you can do that. So, oh, my aperture's open wide and whatever.
Excuse me?
You heard me. Anyway, I believe that the way we see ourselves is like the way cameras take pictures. And that is through certain lenses.
Oh, my goodness, there's so many lenses to see the world through. If you were just going to focus on, like, 90s rap videos, you'd say that's a fisheye lens. So, yes, it could be. And you can see the whole world that way. The fisheye lens is amazing because you can almost see behind you. And I invented a lens where you can only see you behind. It's for selfies.
Oh, okay. But there's also a telephoto lens.
Oh, that's the Spanish one.
No, no, no. It's a telephoto lens you can see real far with. It's almost like a telescope with a camera on it.
Well, that's what it is, probably. I wonder how long it took somebody to think, I could hook that telescope up to the camera and see right in their window and then have evidence.
Well, I don't know if I want to have evidence. But then in the dark room, come on, plate, large silver plate or something, whatever they used to do photos on. It wasn't always digital. It used to be film, and there was different size film, and the cartridges came in all different sizes. And finally, some people used the 35-millimeter film, fancy people, and you could put that in your camera all manually and everything. But there were also these compact ones that did have different kinds of cartridges that just plugged in them. Then you take that to the Eckerd's or Walgreens or whatever, and then you get it back, the pictures back. And you say, I hope you didn't, please say you didn't look through them, is what you would say to the clerk. And they go, oh, of course not. You could take, sometimes they wouldn't tell you, but the people there, if you say, I want doubles, they would write triples, and then they would keep a set for themselves. And for art school, because that's a lot of things. That used to be all right for art students. Say, hey, I'm just going to steal people's private lives and do that. And that'll be here's my artist statement. Aha. And then I'm going to take their lives and I'm just going to look at it and point. And you can laugh or cry, feel bad for them or anything badly for them too, as well, depending. Now, you might also be hearing a candidates debate right now, within me, within everything I say. Can you imagine if your brain is doing that? And I was listening to Undergas Kyson, and he said, mile a minute or something. Brains are faster than that even. I think it's even faster. And you are considering things, and if you have a prefrontal cortex or whatever they call it, then you're able to say, hey, wait a minute, is that a good thing to do? Is this a sort of pants taken off scenario? And you might say, no, leave them on. But that all is going on so quickly in your brain. Sometimes it is. Sometimes if you've been hit, oh my gosh, these kids, they see this stuff on the television or whatnot. What they see is they see cartoon characters hitting one another with cast iron skillets in the head. And then they'll do that to one another, thinking there's no consequence. And then, bang, that front part of your brain is a lot of it controls impulse behavior. And then after that, they're just doing crazy stuff. So that's a lot of what you see, the nutted junk on YouTube, comes well after their exposure to Tex Avery, who is one of the, you don't even want to know about them. Oh my gosh, there's so many dangers that I remember as a young child that have sort of shaped me. You know, scary things, mostly all adults scared. I remember being, when I was young, there was strangers scared me. Hippies. So hippies? Well, yeah, they weren't, I mean, like everybody, that's all been normalized now, but usually they were, you'd see them and you'd say, what's that, mama? Go, don't look. I don't know what we meant by hippies. I think now it's something else. But I just feel like there used to be more wandering cults or something. I don't know have as much anymore. But, you know, I used to see that and go, hey, is that Jesus? I go, no, no, honey. But I don't think we have that style anymore. Oh, my goodness. But, hey, people are just being themselves, too. here's something. Here's a debate I have all the time. And that is that I do have different expectations and of other people, or do I have different standards than I have for myself? And I love my free expression, but boy, it's annoying in others. I find it, oh gosh, I guess we're all doing our thing, right? But good golly. Then again, I don't want everybody to be like me, but then I do in a way. And if you could create, I do thought experiments all the time. And that's why I have these thought burns on my hands and I can barely breathe from thought lung damage. But I do the experiments regardless because I want to say, hey, what's going on and everything. One of them I do is if I could imagine into being a android companion who looked or did, oh, I know this could go in a real sick direction. But, you know, just let's just say in a pure way, not, and I don't mean a chaste way. I mean, just say like really in a metaphysical way. What are you saying? I don't know, man. What kind of robot would you make? Would it look like you or different from you? Or would it look like a robot? Or, you know, what exactly would you do? What kind of friend would you make yourself on a desert island if it was something more than just a stacked coconuts, which is also fine. Could you imagine that if you had access to all that technology? You can make a robot that looks exactly like you or your favorite actor or a coconut. Oh, I'll tell you, I'm going to make it look like a coconut with a face. That might almost be nicer, you know? I remember my relationship with my stuffed animals was way better than with my family. And they didn't look a lot even like me. And yet I could relate to them more. Just I remember that feeling as a child. I mean, I guess I liked people all right, but I remember going to a house and go, oh my God, thank God, dogs. Oh, hey, y'all. Oh, you don't even believe what I've been through. Let's play ball and chase. And it was just such a relief. It was also because I think I wasn't around enough children. I remember getting to a neighborhood. I was about 5 or 6 or something. I got to the neighborhood, and I think everybody was already in gangs, I feel like. And I just was like, oh, I don't want, man. You know, when you're younger, you get in 3 or 4, you don't have to worry about it. I don't mean like real gangs, you know, like I mean like groups of kids, a gang up, a little, not, I don't like the word clique. Because it makes me spit saliva into my microphone. And it's old, and it's starting to smell like, oh, a breath-sickle is what it smells like. What's that aroma? Oh, my goodness, Tom Ford's going to make a fragrance out of it. It's called halitosis. Effing halitosis or something. He'd spell it out, though, not afraid. Oh, my goodness, I want to be bold with my art, too. I want to express myself, but what am I expressing? Am I merely being a mirror? That happens a lot. What is that? That pronunciation of that word is just a blessed inside joke for all the people who have been listening to me for the show for 400 years. They say, I know what that's about. He always says it that way. He's explained it before. Oh, I love you so much. I'm giving you an embrace right now. Am I simply, though, reflecting some world, some culture, something? I want to be accepted, so I am going to be the best possible mimic I can. And I step onto the stage a monkey. There's a Kafka story like that. And monkey's like, hey, and gives lectures. The monkey goes and gives lectures and everything's been, they kidnapped me and then they taught me poker. And, but that's the way I feel a lot of times, like I'm aping the culture, expectations, and yet do I want to fit in? Of course. Who wants to be ostracized? Except ostracized boy who's born that way. And there's always one. But nobody really wants to be kicked out or out of the group. Everybody wants to be loved or accepted or praised, you know? And you see that when you're young, a kid's going that way. Say, blow, bless their heart. And then you see the adults who they've hooked up with and what the expectation of those adults are. And then go, oh, well, I love you so much. You're going to die in a war. But that's, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong. My goodness, you could be all sorts of ways to live your life. But I was just saying, in school, I can sort of pick between the falling out of the helicopter ones and the dentists. I don't know. You're not that young. The movie 7-Up.
What's that about?
It's about British children, not soda. And they track them every now. They're like 60-something. To some multiple of 7. And they... one of the kids is a leap year kid, though. He's super young still. But they track them, everything. With the theory was that by 7 years old, you're fully formed adult self. And for me, that's true. I remember smoking cigars and going like, "What's it all about? Come on!" And at 7, and that's pretty much the same. Are you? And the reason probably is the people around you. So let's say you're born a Walenda. You're going to fly. So you're going to walk a tightrope, probably. You know, and if you're last name, if you have a certain last name, boom, that's probably what you're going to do. I'm not going to name any. Oh, I guess I was trying to think of a Kohler. You're probably going to make urinals or something. I don't know. Crane, you're probably going to make toilets and urinals. It's just something like that. But, you know, you're not. It's not fate. It's just that you're. This is the world that you're born into. And it's like the Ugly Duckling. Do you remember the Ugly Duckling story?
Tell it to us again, Uncle Hardy.
All right. Once upon a time, there's some ducklings, and they were highly judgmental. And they were very, very critical of other people's appearances and everything like that. It was really, really icky. And then one time, this other child, fowl child, that's, I mean that in the sense of the, it's a bird-like thing, waterfowl, comes, which is different than foul water, oh my goodness, and is living with him or hanging out with him. I don't know. You know, there's always some kid in the neighborhood and you go, "Do you have parents?" It was that kind of kid. And I guess he was hanging with him all the time. And so I guess, okay, well, I guess I'm making 4 grilled cheeses. That kid. So he's hanging around. And as they start to mature, you know, you go, he's looking a little, you know, different. And it's because he's a different species. And that happened in my neighborhood growing up, because there was a child, and I go, "You're some advanced species." And they're going, "Yeah, they're from another planet, my people, and everything." We also had a Homo floresiensis, and wonderful. That was a wonderful family, and they were from. Someone was doing some time travel, and they went to ancient. Gosh, I don't even know. I think it's like ancient Indonesia or something like that, ancient Bali, and they ran into these, what they call, it's a misnomer, hobbit people, but they're real, it's a real species of human beings called Homo floresiensis, and taught them English, and they came out and said, "You know, now we're one of you." Wouldn't they have, that's counterintuitive, that voice. I know, I didn't want to go with the hot, I thought, what if they, you know, they're little, but perhaps they have a really resonant vocal, you know, chest cavity. Because they are sort of ancient. So why would it be high pitched necessarily? And, you know, chimps that size can be like, who knows what they talk, but they were a nice family. I don't remember now because, I was probably only 4. I don't remember how old we lived in that neighborhood. But there were people from all different times. And I think that's why that we were in that neighborhood, because if you had been exposed to time travel, they'd put you in this neighborhood with people from different planets and times and things like that. And it was fun. And I'll tell you what, I guess this fella's dead, Dick Brown, Hegger the Horrible. But we lived next to a Viking family that was based on. That's why they seemed so modern. So I don't know, for what it's worth. I'm not name dropping or anything. I usually do, though. Oh, my goodness. Hey, You know, this is a good opportunity for you. If you feel like you have a name that I could drop, gosh, I'd love it. And some people underestimate the droppability of their name. They go, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, you might, what's your name? Oh, it's, you know, Tom Smith. Okay, I don't know. Anyway, I used to, but I was in McMillan and Brothers Band. Oh, I don't know if that's a real, I hope if it's a real band, I'm sorry. And I, oh my gosh, everybody knows who that is. Let's say everybody knows who that is. That I could, that's droppable. You just got to add that, what do you call it, sobriquet? You know, say, fella Tom of, and then you list the band or something like that. I don't know. I do that with WFMU's. Hardy White is what I sometimes say. And, gosh, when they dump me, I don't know how I'm going to. Could still, you still, even exes can say that, you know. I feel like I'm still, in a way, Mrs. John Lennon. But you don't have to be, literally, anymore. So maybe I could still be, maybe my whole life I'm going to be WFMU's Hardy White. And there's another example being shaped by something on the outside. Oh my goodness, did I change myself for this audience. So here I am, WFMU's Hardy White, as opposed to the Hardy White that, you know, people at Bubba Leprechaun Middle School in Marina, Florida went to classes with. Am I that person? Or am I the one that is, you know, right now on the radio with you for this radio station? Is it bespoke? I love that word. So bespoke means tailor-made, you know, made to order. And a lot of people drop it, sounds fancy. And like when we want to make fun of the bougie, twee, whatever, pretentious types, they've got a bespoke suit on. But that's not a terrible thing. I'd love to have a tailor-made suit. I can't afford it. I got to go to that place where they... The place that implies that it's a big storehouse full of humans, but it's really their outerwear. And I say outerwear, they might even have underwear there. I don't even know. What a white is such a good color for underwear, isn't it? I guess every stand-up comedian has mentioned that, but I'm still astonished some of the conventions that linger. And that brings me to another point. Culture and these things are something that we have very little influence on and we inherit. So it's like a house, white underwear, things that don't make sense. And oh my goodness, if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have observational stand-up comics. But they also are evidence that we really don't get a lot of say, that things, even if they're illogical and don't make sense, are perpetuated by the sheer momentum and their ultimate sort of unsteerability, like one of those large freighters. Here we're going. We're crashing into the bridge. When? Good half hour. What? We're going to crash into the bridge in now like 29 minutes. We'll get steer out of the way or put the brakes on. Doesn't work that way. Already started. Too late. So there is a certain momentum to things, to culture, to a lot of things, and we are riding a wonderful wave. We're in a stream.
A stream of consciousness.
Yes. You know why it's not? Well, you know why that's a total misnomer? Because if you do come back to your point, how did you paddle back upstream? So you're on this stream of consciousness, which is carrying you, which implies that it's not going to double back at some point. You know, here we are back again at that rock that's shaped like Marge Simpson. No, we're careening forward irrevocably. But let's say that we bump into a rock, we get out on shore and we double back. Well, then it's not really a stream, is it? It's an outing or something like that, an adventure. And that is more what we're doing. We're wandering together, but we're going to go back home. It's like when you get to those national parks or something and say, are you going to take the, which trail do you want to take? They all lead back to the parking lot, hopefully. There's one trail. It's, I don't even know what color it is. It's like black and white checkered or something. And it goes off a cliff. But now you say, oh, you perish? No, that's for the hang gliders. That's when I was carrying you. That has the same sort of feeling as this footprints in the sand. What are you talking about? You know how I got there. And it's a lot like, look, there's, as you get older and the front part of your brain does sort of drop off into the sea, like a, you know, like a cliff, like a sandy California cliff or something erodes into the sea. And you start to just blurt things out as people say things. And you do kind of free associate and make puns on things. And you start to pay more attention to the, you know, what's being said rather, literally, rather than the content. So somebody will say something, you make a joke on it, but you do it out loud because you're losing your inhibition a little bit. And this is probably what you're hearing, but I'm doing it to myself because I'm alone. So I'm basically cutting myself off, injecting some kind of aside in shorthand. And but I believe that since we're all really exposed to the same stuff, we all think a bit alike. So, you know, there's only a limited amount of associations I can make. Now, I tweeted something about the Hair Bear Bunch, which was a cartoon that was on maybe 2 years or a year even in the early 70s, and which I like to critique because I believe that the voice actors are very fine, like Paul Winchell and everything. Oh, and Joey Ross. Oh, literally. It's not even somebody doing a Joey Ross impression. It's really Joey Ross. And to a young child, you know, to an 8-year-old me or something, I'm going, yes. My point being, when I say something, if you have seen that or have that memory, there are certain things I would say that would lead you to have it. You know what I mean? I was watching, I was hosting a show, really a variety show, and there was a so-called mentalist. And I realized a lot of what he was doing is realizing that there are certain associations that are just really limited, that everybody makes the same ones. And so he could sort of like force people's thinking by triggering these associations without actually having to say it. You know? So if I was talking about it, listen, let's say I was talking about show business in the 70s or something like that, and then I mentioned that the weather was sunny. You might be inclined to then think something. And you might want to share it with me. But that's the way it goes. And I say, no, he knows what's in my head. Well, that's because it's not much there. No, it's not that. It's not that there's that much there. It's that, oh, my goodness, there was so many blueprints. I'm that model. That's how I felt like that before. You look out there and you go, oh, I see that Ford Galaxy. You know, maybe that's me. I'm running into other and going, hey, you're Ford Galaxy. Yeah, remember gas? I don't know what we would talk about as old Ford Galaxies or something. Remember that you'd go to a gas station and let's say it's something like Tom's Standard Station, and they'd give you a souvenir garbage bag made of paper but nicely folded. And it would go on the hand crank of your window hand crank, and you could put your garbage in there, what have you, your used Kleenexes. I don't know what's on. So that would be, that's a memory that an old car might have. I loved the smell of old cars when I was a kid. You're getting, how, like an old, you know, I don't know, because probably the seat was deteriorating. There's something about, I guess it's the leather. What's that? It's a old cow. It's a cow's skin, but it's been in the sun a lot, and it's got paint on it. I like that smell. Yeah, it gets you high and hungry. Maybe that's it. I don't know. Or just nice memories. You know, I like being in a car with an adult, feeling like now we're going somewhere. As a baby, I thought, when am I going to get to the front seat? When I was young, they didn't care about your safety so much and go, you're now old enough to ride in the front seat, son.
Oh, yay.
And soon you'll be walking. But I remember it was awfully young, and you go, and I'm not, I think there were seat belts, and they held you, most of you, not your head or your face, but they'd hold your guts would still be in the seat if there was any kind of accident. And that's good, because they'd have to have something to bury, so they'd strap that part down. And then they finally realized that you should be strapped in like a fighter pilot. I think that'd be better. I'm not against it. Only because if you're riding in something that was factory made, like a cracker, not like a cracker would, I mean like a pretzel or any kind of food that's made in a factory, I don't know how reliable that is. You know what I'm saying? Even if I'm safety and everything, there's nothing to say the wheels aren't going to just come off of my Oreo or my, what's other factory food? I'm naming all these delicious ones. Oh, my goodness. I guess you don't have to make them in a factory. Probably the cookies that have a stamp on them, you might. That seems like tedious to do, to stamp cookies, sandwich cookie tops. Sandwich cookies top stamper is a surname that you don't hear a lot of anymore. And like most disappearing professions, the name disappears with it. Hi, I'm Hardy White. My people were what? What does white mean? Well, actually, it's short for witless, and it's been corrupted over the years. But really, it just means the simpleton, the surname Simpleton. If you're Jeff and Kathy Simpleton. No, I don't know if they exist. Bless your heart. I don't want to make fun of people's names. I'd never do that. But all names, sometimes, probably depending how high you are, sound weird to me at some point, you know, whenever you hear somebody's name. Anyway, that's weird. You know, when you think about it for about 2 seconds, that's really weird. Also, I don't know what city I'm in. No, I usually do. But it does seem to me sometimes that you'll come out of yourself and all those things that are familiar, and you'll say, well, you know, all this stuff, all this culture, all these people's names and all the expectations and the things we call ourselves all seems kind of weirdly arbitrary if you really meditate on it for a few seconds. If you go out in the woods and you sit by a stream and you come back to your society and you come back to all the norms of the things that you've agreed to do and live in and all the designs and all the architecture and all your clothing and all the way your doodads look and everything, it all starts to seem a little aggressively surreal to me, like a little strange, like almost kind of menacing. And I believe that's because they're just echoes of the dead craft our culture, everything. They've made everything. We are absolutely just using the bones of people who don't even exist anymore. And that's who we listen to and revere, and they get a say, even though they're not here anymore. And their say sorts of changes all the time, too. Have you ever noticed that, too? They get to evolve and everything.
What we now know about Lincoln...
Just become a fictional character. It's no matter what your life is, if you do have any kind of fame like that, beyond, it's never you, really. It's so strange. But was it ever you, is what I'm saying. And who is this you? And why are there two of you? This, you know, I can't help myself. Well, that duality is probably something that we should examine. And I say, have a debate. Who is this me and me? Well, I guess part of it is the fact that I am a weird brain creature. So here's the thing. The Daleks on Doctor Who, I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they look like some calamari, some squid, brain squid in a very primitive auto vacuum thing. I don't know, it's supposed to be a gosh, it looks like something you put in your bottom or something. I don't know, but it isn't anything. It's weird, but it's a like a car. That's it. You don't put cars in your bottom. You might if you're trying to smuggle it. If they ever make, can you imagine they make Matchbox or one of those Matchbox cars? They make them illegal. So I'm better put this somewhere where they can't find it, like Houdini. I call my bottom Houdini's safe deposit box. Because he would put keys in there, because he would have it later to do a trick. I don't literally do that, but I do that mentally, you know? I have in my mind palace is a mind Houdini. And in my mind Houdini anus, I have keys and all sorts of padlocks and really basically solutions. But solutions. I have a van that goes around and you go, what's that? What's that? And it's B-U-T. But solutions. And you say, well, I don't know what that means. And I say, well, it's a solution for a problem that you don't know you have yet. Well, when will I know I have it? You'll have hired me. And I provide both. So I bring you your problem. And then I'm both the cause and the solution to it. Isn't that amazing? Another word for that is friendship or something. I think that's what that is. You know, why do you say that, Hardy? Well, you're confronted with another human being, and it puts you in a weird position, you know? I was like, well, what are we going to do about this? Are you a threat? Are you friendly? And that creates kind of a dilemma, doesn't it? And then they could become a friend or an ally, and there you have a solution. But that solution was necessitated by this encounter that probably didn't have to happen. I'm with you, Hardy. I don't like to leave the house. No, it's nice to do sometimes. Do you want to go someplace where there's people like you or not like you? Or do you have to go someplace where people are like enough like you? What are you talking about? Well, that's a perfect example. Let's see, WFMU. You go there and you go, well, people are going to be, I'm into music, let's say, and say, oh, people are going to be like me, but not exactly like me, but more like me than people who aren't into music. In many, many ways, I've made a terrible choice for an example, and I should have picked, you know, an Italian restaurant or something. But we'll ahead and go with it. Do you like to be the only one in a group? I've used to be that way with some cultural groups. I go, I'm going to go around because try to get out of me this tendency to want to be around people who are like me. So maybe I will purposely put myself in social situations or groups where I am, different. But I'm not going to make my identity I am different, or I'm not going to go into a group and assert myself like, say, oh, you bunch of so-and-sos, I'm the only so-and-so, that kind of thing. Not bad at all, but let's say it's a long-haired men's group, and I'm bald. And so, you know, I hope they accept me. But it's good to go and feel like what it's like to be excluded preemptively, or whatever you want to say, a priori exclusion, just based on no fault of your own. I felt that in France a little bit. Sometimes it depended on the people, but some people would look at you and go, oh my goodness, that's an American. I don't know how much I like them. And others would look at you and they'd go, one time somebody looked at me and goes, hey, George Bush. And I was, I was wearing a fedora, so I don't know what that meant. But I guess it's just American, he wanted to yell something at me. And I was in Fort Lauderdale in the 70s, and someone yelled Led Zeppelin at me for no reason, and not because I looked like them. It was just as a salute. So I think that's what that was. People used to, you know, oh, Led Zeppelin, like that, as a, just a salute in Fort Lauderdale. If you could do it, if a tooth could fall out as you're doing it, that's amazing. So you bum a cigarette, You say either thank you or Led Zeppelin, like that, with your fist in the air. And then a tooth falls out to the floor. We both look at it and you go on your way. And then that's a beautiful, I wish that could be preserved in a snow globe. Little scene. You know how like in some fantasy things, you look at the picture and it's just a little moving picture or a moving hologram and depicts the scene that happened? Like when in that Harry Potter, you go, oh, I have a snow globe, but you can see my parents being murdered or something. And I look at that every day for comfort. And he doesn't. But it'd be nice to have something like that. A little scene, a little beautiful poem of a scene. Like those shots in, what do they call them, pillow shots or something in Ozu, where just between a scene with people, there's just, oh, there's a train going by. Here's some laundry. Laundry on a line. Just like the Welcome Back, Kotter opening sequence. And that's a beautiful little image. And I like to think that way. You know, that's why I'm not a storyteller at all. No, I'm more of an abstract painter, but not with words, with paint. And that's why my radio work is not very good. But you know, it doesn't mean that you can't do a lot of things not well. You can do some things well, those things you can do in private. And think of that. It's like, oh, you know, I do that one thing so well, this is impossible to share that. Yes, exactly. But that's beautiful. You can still give yourself credit. Oh my gosh, there's so much in our internal self that's beautiful. Do you have, I like, again, to go on another, is this a debate? It is a debate because you can clearly hear there's different me's advocating. Look, I want to fit in and I do want to be accepted and I want to be loved and I want to be thought funny, ha-ha, not funny weird necessarily or funny outsider. I want to be thought clever and not stupid, of course. But there's also a part of me that knows that there is a solitary nature to things and that no one's coming with me when I die. That my mortality is this, my ultimate loneliness. And that this world, just like the world of a movie or fiction or a series of adult, young adult novels, like all these details are about to be worthless and pointless as I transition in to the to nothingness, to moo. Are you transitioning into nothingness? I mean, I don't know. No time soon, I hope. Well, listen, I'm trying to do a little financial planning. It's not imminent. I have been in acquaintance of people who have outlived their plans. And that is, you don't even think about that. You go, oh no, I lived too long. And now what? Because it really is like over 100's rough, you know, even if you're in good health, unless you're Dick Van Dyke, you know, because I think he might have some, a little nest egg. Do you think he put anything aside from all that, from Dick Van Dyke show and then Dick Van Dyke this and that and the other thing? Oh my goodness, I hope so. So what is he, 99? If I was the world's richest man, I would make him this offer. If you come physically clean my chimney on the roof, dressed as not Chitty Bang Bang, what's it? Dressed as Spoonful of Sugar, Mary Poppins person, Bert, I think is the character. And clean my chimney, I will donate $400 million, $1 billion to some charity of your choice or a nephew. And let's say he do it. Say, well, you could die or something. He's 99. But what a way. That'd be incredible, though. That's the thing. He doesn't have to survive it for me to make good on my deal of $1 billion. The other thing I've noticed about Dick Van Dyke, I will resume the debate in a minute, but I just have to respond to that. I can't let that go by. This is crazy. I can't let this go unremarked. But if you have seen Mary Poppins, there's a scene in which Dick Van Dyke is dressed up as an old person, and good God, that's him now. Oh, my God, he went back in time. It's bizarre, but he's like, actually, he's more spry now. But what the heck? How did he know he would be old?
It is some spooky stuff in movies if you really, really look and you see some of the predictions. Like I was talking about that Paul Simon song. They mention also, so Paul Simon said this. He said, man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. I was just a poor boy. And the story so and so, I had squandered my resistance for a pocket full of problems, such as problems. All lies and jests, still a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. Is that right? Am I getting it right? Oh my gosh, I'm no singer. I love karaoke. I love doing the hum, hum, hum song by Crash Test Dummies and everything. Oh, it's just what a wonderful world. Music is so beautiful to me. And a lot of people don't like it. But my gosh, if you're listening to WFMU, you probably like music and appreciate it and want to hear maybe different kinds. And that exposes you to different worlds and different thoughts, too. Like some, I'll listen to some of the musics of some cultures, and I'll think, how can they tolerate that wood on wood sound? Ah! But then that it gives me insight, and we don't all have to like the same things. I thought it was funny when I was coming up. They called it world music, just any music that wasn't how chauvinistic. I think it doesn't take, it's not a betrayal of your own culture to realize that people around the world make music and they do it pretty well and been doing it a long time. And we all steal from each other, which is wonderful. And that's the only way to get exciting new things. It's just the genetics works that way too. Oh my goodness. Some music looks to me like a Habsburg chin. You know, it's just, man, you got to add other elements in there. That's what's going on right now is it you've become distorted. You make a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. There's got to be some new information moving in. So we, our small internal selves, the one that is driven like a leaf on this great river of liver that flows through time. Oh, man, I get the drugs are just starting to hit. No, I'm kidding. Oh, bless my heart. Right now, I'm going to take all your blessings. As I misspeak, I was on this poetic roll. And then I got tongue-tied. And I was becoming, because I was ambitious. But I guess what I'm saying is, I believe that, yes, we're along for the ride. But we can always, in this beautiful theater that we're in, all experience it together. We can all... One of us stand up and yell, fire, fire, everyone run, there's a fire. And I think that's a tremendous thing. And then that evolves things. They don't become stale. And I don't recommend you do that. It's so funny that's an expression. Someone must have done it. For it to be, it's like the boy who cried wolf. You know, how many times did it happen? Just the once, and you're going, man, this is going to become a cautionary tale. Or did it have to happen a lot? So the theater one, that might have been just like, enough! Enough of this! Every time I go to the theater, someone's yelling, fire this, fire that. Enough! Do you think, maybe it's I have a theory that it was like these sneaky peanut vendors. And they go, we got to get them out here!
How are we going to get them out, boss?
I don't know. Go in there and yell fire. They'll all run out here. We're selling peanuts.
So it might have been something like that. It feels like there might be, always be commerce at the base of something like that, where they have to make a rule. Because this is something they don't teach you in economics about capitalism. It's the top cap factor. Some people call it the Bilko factor. And there's always going to be somebody who's looking to get an edge. And it bless their hearts, they haven't really violated any rules, but it just really messes things up and we all suffer. But, you know, you can't stop somebody from being diabolically clever. If we did that, my gosh, there'd be no serial killers or I don't know what. Cars. I'm radicalized because I saw The Magnificent Ambersons. And it can be, the novel's one thing, but the movie, it can be taken a bunch of different ways. And I just took it to be anti-car. And I was like, yes. I don't know if that makes you pro-aristocracy. That's the mixed message I got from, what are you talking about? There's a movie by Orson Welles called The Magnificent Ambersons. And the studio messed with the ending, so it's got this tacked-on stupid ending. But it's a pretty good movie. And the sort of novel was about kind of bemoaning how much the cars are changing the culture. And dividing people, really, so they don't see each other as much. Or like I was just about to say, see the Smothers Brothers? The Smothers Brothers' mothers I don't see as much as the other Smothers Brothers' mother. I do that every morning to warm up, because the other Smothers Brothers' mother, over and over again. Gosh, the things we do for radio. I'm glad I'm not one of those real announcers or anything. I can't even imagine being like Ernie Anderson or something, where you've got to clear your, you've got to smoke just to get the edge, you know, so you can do CBS or something like that. Sacrifices. I've been blessed with allergies. So that's a thank you, Lord. No cigarettes in my life since 19. What was my last cigarette? I might have done one. Just goofing around or something. You know how you go, uh-oh, I got a play coming up where I play a cigarette guy, or I don't know. I'm Johnny Carson in a play, and it's just a community play, but every time we rehearse, I got that's going, and now I'm hooked again. Or if it's worse if you have to play a character who's a heroin addict, because I'm not sure that they can, you know, did they do that with pot when they smoke pot in the movies? They sometimes use the real or the not real. It's hard to know, but you never know what people are doing in the movies. Now, I had read as to where when you see on film that it's ice cream, it's really mashed potatoes, or instead of Coca-Cola, they'll use soy sauce. You say, is that vinegar? No, that's urine, because a lot of times things look different on film, and they all these tricks of appearances, so you don't even know really what you're seeing. So we're being shaped by a world that we misperceive. That's even weirder. And then we bring that into our mind palace, where there's all sorts of things going on. It's not just a palace, it's a small village. That's how mine is. And there's like a weird underground. Have you gone under there? Okay, oh my God, in your mind palace, there is in the kitchen, there's some stairs that go down, and then they turn into an escalator, and then they go down what looks like sort of an abandoned mall or empty mall, this kind of liminal space. It's so spooky. I'm not sure what it's used for, but it's in there, and it's under that part of your kitchen where you keep all your sensory experiences that you had as a child, when food had a bigger impact. And I saw recently this, because children are super tasters because they need to be able to detect poison in food, because a lot of times, this is evolution, so children have, they can taste more bitterness in food because it correlates with poison, and they have to be able to detect poison because they could be an heir to royalty. So like a child, you know, say, here, my prince, have this, Waldorf salad. And it's,
it's bitter to me.
Well, that's good. Now he's not going to be poisoned by his evil uncle who's trying to usurp the throne. And then that is built into evolution. It's amazing how things work.
Hardy?
What?
You're making me something.
That's true. I feel like that. I don't want to be provocative necessarily. I just want to, and I don't demand your attention. Hey! Oh, excuse me. I felt guilty the minute I did that. I don't want to scare you or anything. I really don't like, this is just for the record. First of all, I've never liked to be surprised or tickled. I've always thought that was, I hate that as a kid. I go, you need to stop that right now. I swear if I had carried like a boot dagger as a kid, I would have stabbed some relatives. I go, do not tickle. I don't like it. It's horrible. So I that and anything like that. In fact, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to sit over here. I eventually got that shirt that says, let's not touch. And that's a good thing, because then it avoids the problem. But, oh my goodness, I don't know. I think I'm still like that though. Don't try to do it. I might, because I don't want to just compulsively hit you in the face, you know, just out of a reflex. You know, I still feel bad. The doctor, I did that knee thing, and I kicked him, and the lamp goes over and everything like that. And he's just, I guess your reflexes are okay. Like that, like Ed Wynn. No, I don't know if that happened or not. I don't really know who I am. And I bless you because I'm whoever you want me to be, my friend. Hardy White belongs to you. So you go out there and you tell people that you're me and you make a little money off of it or something like Gallagher too. I don't care. Why if I'm so, well, Hardy's not touring. Go ahead and do it. I'm not sure I have a good enough established shtick that you could really get anything out of it. But bless you if you could. I've been going around doing you, and I'm... Well, no, because you're probably just doing you, unless you're stealing specific material. That's you now. Oh, my goodness. We're all in this together. Everything is stolen, or... You know, you're living in... we're little crabs living in snail shells. I always thought that the crab made that shell, but he's just borrowed it. Somebody else used to live there, like a trailer. Everybody who's ever moved into a used trailer think, you know, a kind of lower class people used to live here. Now we live here. But, Crabby, my goodness, get a new perspective. I've had snail friends. Oh, my friends, you are my snail friends, and you are listening to, I declare myself the winner. WFMU East Orange. Oh, you're listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange. WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in New York City and Rockland County, New York, and online on WFMU.org worldwide. Freeform radio, the way that radio was freed, formless, and yet with form. Oh, my goodness. Thank you, my friends. And I will see you again next week.
name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twin's 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 name